KALW.
I mean, they have money to go to war. They should have money to pay your electric bill, your water bill.
A small business owner in East Oakland shares how the coronavirus is affecting his work.
If I didn't have to, I wouldn't be here because I have kids. I don't want my kids to get sick or myself.
The obstacles small retailers face as shops slowly open up in the Bay Area. Then the pandemic has turned Lake Merritt into a place of refuge and anxiety.
So the lake is for everyone. So I'm just frustrated that people aren't thinking of positive solutions that preserve what the lake is.
And we'll go to a place where amateurs and pros learn to cast a line.
I'm just here to work on my stroke, you know, like golfers do. It's the same thing with fishing, you know.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Bay Area shoppers may soon be able to go into their favorite stores once again. Governor Gavin Newsom recently announced in-store shopping is okay, but right now, county health officials throughout the Bay Area are still limiting shopping to curbside pickup only. The boost in sales may help small businesses, but owners still have their concerns. KALW's East Oakland reporter Janae Darden was curious to know how non-essential business owners were faring. She walked around Oakland's Fruitvale district to hear what they had to say.
Travel back in time with me to my first day reporting in the field and actually interviewing people in person during the quarantine. It's almost Mother's Day weekend and I'm in the Fruitvale district. I put on my coronavirus armor before leaving the car. Gloves, a mask, and a long boom pole with the mic attached so I can interview people from 6 feet away in 80 degree weather. It is not fun. I walk by all of the mom and pop stores and notice it's almost business as usual around the Fruitvale. Some stores are closed, but I see some people popping into the shoe stores and getting their hair done. Dress and furniture stores are open too, which is strange because this is days before Alameda County officials announced non-essential retail businesses can open. Understandably, business owners don't want to be interviewed. It's hard to convince them, and my mask isn't helping. Finally, I meet Letty Adornia. She sells colorful handmade jewelry at Ecuador Imports, across the street from the Fruitvale BART station. She says times have been tough and she needs to open her stand.
I no have money. No have money for rent, no have money for food.
Letty tells me her husband is the only one working. After she goes back to her stand, I think about how some people have shamed non-essential small business owners for operating prematurely. On the other hand, there are people like Letty who are barely surviving. Even before the pandemic, folks around here have been struggling with the higher cost of living. Rent prices in this area have surged 83% in the last 15 years, while the median household income is a little more than $35,000. I keep walking, dragging the boom pole. Many people aren't wearing masks. I wonder if it's the heat. But it is concerning given the high infection rates for COVID in this area and other parts of East Oakland. I reach the Tony Rossi & Sons flower shop. I stop in and meet the owner, Mauricio Vivas. He's busy getting ready for Mother's Day, but we step outside to talk. The flower shop has been here for 70 years.
I started working here when I was 17 years old. I worked my way up, and then we bought the business from the previous owner.
He just reopened his shop before Alameda County health officials gave retailers permission for storefront pickups. That's because the governor allowed florists to open, which is confusing because the county is moving slower than the governor. In all of these years of working in a flower shop, nothing could prepare him for this pandemic.
And it's been a really tough time. I just got a 15-day notice for my water bill. I'm a florist.
His bill is $600 total for 2 months.
I'm not going to pay you this month. But I have to pay it next month. And where's that extra money gonna come from?
Mauricio says although Mother's Day weekend is a big time of the year for his business, they're not even making 40% of their normal sales. And with graduations and large events being canceled, the future doesn't look much better. He wants the government to do more and wishes leaders thought the quarantine through.
A governor, a president can't just say, shut your door, don't work. Then what are we gonna eat, you know? What are we gonna do to survive?
Mauricio also says government leaders should have thought more about how to reopen businesses because he says curbside pickup doesn't work well for his flower shop.
it's hard when you tell people, you know, you can't come in. Just tell me what you want. And the first thing people say, well, I want to look at your flowers and see what I want.
I asked Mauricio if he applied for government assistance to get him through, like an emergency federal loan for small businesses struggling during the pandemic. He says he didn't qualify for the Paycheck Protection Program. As for others...
No, when I applied for the loans, they were all gone, the first loans. And then for the second loans, because it's a family-owned business, and I didn't have a payroll, so then I didn't qualify.
Before I go, I ask him what he would say to those who don't want non-essential businesses to reopen just yet.
And people are thinking you're greedy, you want to make money. But in reality is, big companies, they're still making money. Politicians are getting paid. I'm talking from people that we have to work daily to pay our mortgage, pay our utilities, and put food on our tables. If I didn't have to, I wouldn't be here because I have kids. I don't want my kids to get sick or myself.
2 weeks later, the county gave retail shops permission for curbside pickup. I give Mauricio a call and I ask him, how's business?
Business is okay. We're down 50% of orders. Most of our orders are being placed through either the phone or our website. Prior to the closure of the shops, we had a lot of walk-in customers, and those are the ones that we need back. Those are the people that make the other half of our business.
I ask if he's caught up on his bills, especially the $600 water bill.
Well, I got my first runoff notice for my water, 48-hour notice today, and I'm a flower shop, so go figure. A flower shop without water, that's going to be fun.
But Mauricio says with more people venturing outside their homes, he's staying optimistic.
We have a very loyal customer support, and I know they'll be coming around and we'll be okay.
Mauricio says he's going to contact the water company for assistance and look for financial resources through the city of Oakland. In Oakland, I'm Janae Darton for Cross Currents.
Janae is KALW's East Oakland reporter. You can find more of her stories at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Since shelter in place began, another issue health officials around the state have struggled to deal with is packed parks and beaches. You may have seen the photos of people flocking to places like Dolores Park and Stinson Beach. And then there are the crowds at Lake Merritt in Oakland. City officials say the town's crown jewel will need to close if people don't start following social distancing guidelines. KALW's Holly J. McDeed and Julia Linus Goodman report.
Julia and I haven't been outside much lately.
Other than for those essential errands, like buying groceries.
But when it comes to going outside for fresh air or exercise, you have to calculate the pros and the cons. It's no longer just a walk in the park.
While we haven't really been outside, we have braved the virtual neighborhood of Nextdoor.com. And Nextdoor is abuzz with people worried about the crowds at Lake Merritt.
My name is Carl Johnson. I've seen lots of people out picnicking, kids, families, not wearing masks.
My name is Leslie Rose. I feel like I'm getting a lot more exercise because I'm constantly jumping out of the way of people.
My name is Lexine Alpert. It's annoying to have somebody huffing and puffing from running and they're a foot away from me. And I told my friend, this is the last time I'm coming here.
During our travels on Nextdoor, we also meet Christina Beach. As a kid, she remembers trips to Fairyland, the amusement park at Lake Merritt. It felt like Disneyland. And she says now she lives a 5-minute walk away and the lake feels more like a lifeline.
I live in a small studio apartment, and right now I've got construction going on every single block on each side. Go escape to the lake just to have a refuge from the noise and to get some peace of mind.
And she's not the only one escaping to the lake during shelter in place. She says the lake is so busy, every day feels like a Sunday. And she is worried about contracting the virus.
Surprisingly, I'm not that squeamish, but it kind of freaks me out when they jog too closely, sweating and panting.
But Beach is also nervous about something else. A few weeks ago, she was at a coffee shop near the lake when she noticed a cop standing nearby.
And a woman came up to him and said, "Did you see all the thousands of people that were at the lake this weekend?" And he said, "No." She said, "Oh, yes, there was tons of them. It was really horrible. None of them were wearing face masks." And he said, "Well, you know, they're probably just needing to let off some steam. They've been cooped up for a long time."
Police say they aren't making arrests or citing people for physical distancing violations, but Oakland has closed off parking around the lake on weekends and issued dozens of citations for those infractions. And officials have also banned vendors from city parks.
Beach wonders what kind of message the city is sending with those restrictions. And she worries about incidents like that woman complaining to the cop in the cafe.
I found it disturbing. Times are chaotic, and so they're really hyper-focusing on shaming people.
She sees the lake as a gathering place for different communities, and she worries that all these rules and citizen policing are making people feel unwelcome.
So the lake is for everyone, so I'm just frustrated that people aren't thinking of positive solutions that preserve what the lake is, instead of thinking about ways to make it a private front yard.
Jason Corburn, who directs the Center for Global Healthy Cities at UC Berkeley, agrees.
The city of Oakland should not be discouraging by locking up parking lots and forcing people to only go to one space or another. It's a terrible policy.
Corburn says limiting access to parks will unequally impact Oakland's low-income residents, who are disproportionately people of color.
Low-income residents are often living in smaller living quarters with no backyard, no front yard, no balcony, no way to get outside. They may be having to stay inside in an unhealthy home that may have toxic mold or lead or other things that we're not addressing.
And research shows that the virus is more likely to spread in indoor spaces than outside in places like parks. So getting outdoors might be the healthiest option.
But Corburn says not everybody lives near a well-maintained park. And larger, more desirable parks tend to be located in wealthier neighborhoods.
Just because you live near the beach or a beautiful regional park doesn't mean that you should be the only people to have access to that. To restrict people about where they can go to parks is regressive and discriminatory and probably racist.
Lake Merritt has long been a flashpoint for debates about who gets to access public space. In 2018, a white woman called the police to report two black men grilling at the lake. The men say she was targeting them because of their race. Oakland teacher Logan McWilliams says the incident was part of a pattern.
When the barbecue Becky situation happened, it really made me realize that I had just become too accustomed to discrimination and racism.
In response, McWilliams started an event called Barbecuing While Black, where black people gathered at the lake as a way of claiming their right to be there.
And it had made national news, and it became a force within the city around what happens when we come together in the spirit of unity and love.
But issues around policing of public space haven't gone away, and the pandemic has only added new concerns.
The Alameda County Sheriff's Department has received over 3,000 complaints about physical distancing violations, and the agency says most of those complaints are coming from Oakland.
That doesn't sit right with McWilliams.
I think that people that are calling to complain are not necessarily concerned about health and safety so much as they are concerned about black and brown bodies that they're uncomfortable with being around or they're uncomfortable seeing have joy.
McWilliams says the city shouldn't rely on policing to get people to follow the rules. On the other hand, as much as she doesn't want to see increased police enforcement, she worries about people not following the guidelines and then getting COVID-19.
Social distancing is just necessary at this time, especially for people of color and black people, even more so because we are contracting it and dying from it at much larger proportions than other members of the community.
McWilliams does support actions like reducing opening hours at the lake or closing off sections at certain times. She says without any restrictions, people could get sick.
Over-policing just isn't the answer, period. But there some changes do need to happen so that people can be safe.
Oakland officials say they're trying to keep parks open and limit the crowds. The city has plastered signs about social distancing around the lake. Mayor Libby Schaaf launched the hashtag #GiveTheLakeABreak to implore residents not to crowd in large groups.
And what you can do for the lake for its birthday is give the lake a break. Please give the lake a break in honor of its birthday.
Park ambassadors wearing bright orange t-shirts that say COVID-19 now patrol Lake Merritt to remind people about the rules and hand out face masks.
If parking restrictions and education fail to persuade people, Mayor Schaaf has said it could be necessary to ramp up enforcement or even close down the lake.
Please, this weekend we had too many crowds, too many events, too much crowding. Wear your mask and do not have mass gatherings.
With so many competing concerns about Lake Merritt, a lot of people are just avoiding it altogether.
But for regulars like Christina Beach, a trip to Lake Merritt is like a kind of meditation.
She says there are ways to go outside and stay safe.
A couple of times a day, Beach puts on a mask and braves a walk out of her apartment to the lake. Sometimes joggers get too close, but she has an escape plan for that. She freezes, ducks, and then gets out of the way.
They're not going to go out of their way. They're going to just keep going, or they're going to just swiftly go by you. It's definitely our responsibility to make ourselves safe.
And often she plops down on a park bench and watches the community in motion from a distance.
Without fail, every time I walk around the lake, I have a feeling of great appreciation for living in Oakland. You can see drummers, you have the bird watchers, bubble machines.
For Christina and others, the lake can be both soothing and mellow and kind of a minefield.
But it's one that she and so many others will navigate for the sake of getting outside.
At Lake Merritt, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
And I'm Julia Linus Goodman for Cross Currents.
You see that woman?
Holly is KLW's justice reporter, and Julia is a fellow in our audio academy. Find more stories about how the coronavirus crisis is affecting the Bay Area at KLW.org/coronavirus.
Get ready. You got to move.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. Now, let's cross the bay for a visit to another beautiful gathering place. It's time for a new edition of KALW's Golden Gate Parkcast. We're down in the wilder places of the park now, the lower side with its hiking and mountain bike trails, its hidden gardens, its untamed forests. We're continuing our westward journey, and to get where we're going, we need to cross back over John F. Kennedy Drive. Now there's traffic here, so watch out. Okay, we should be good now. You never know what you're going to encounter on a day in the park. This is the Golden Gate Parkcast. I'm your host, Hanat Baba. In this less cultivated area, there's more space, and there are more animals out here, too. Listen to these birds. You'll see coyotes out here sometimes, plenty of raccoons in the evening, foxes, too, if you're lucky. Okay, we've made it to a turnoff from the road. Let's head back into the forest. It's really quiet back here. That is, except for the occasional whizzing sound, gentle crank, and quiet chatter. We're at Golden Gate Park's casting pools. Ian Lewis is going to tell us the story of this place.
There are certain places in San Francisco that make you feel far away from a bustling metropolis. And this is one of them. It's 9 in the morning. I'm watching a group of men with long fishing poles wade out in water up to their waists. They're fly fishermen. the kind you'd likely find in a cold mountain stream. But here, we're far from the nearest river.
My name is Mehrdad Saberi, and we are at the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club.
Since 1938, this club has given people who love to fly fish a place to practice, right here in the city.
I come here to do what I enjoy a lot, which is casting fly rods.
He's talking about getting a tiny, almost weightless lure, the fly, to land exactly where he wants it. Saberi makes it look easy, but really, being good at it takes lots of training and constant practice. Saberi says I can talk to him while he casts, but first, in order to know what fly fishing is really like, he wants me to take a lesson.
Today, you, Ian, are going to join me, Willie George, and we're going to learn how to fly cast. I'm going to help you a little bit. Is that cool?
That sounds good. Willie George is the president of the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club. And like any great club, this one has a great clubhouse. Framed displays of handmade flies hang on the wall next to taxidermied fish. But today, we're here for the pools. Three rectangular concrete ponds. The only fish in these pools are tiny minnows. Those are to keep the mosquitoes down, not to catch. In fly fishing, though, if you're only interested in the fish, you're in the wrong sport.
I'm just here to work on my stroke, you know, like golfers do. It's the same thing with fishing, you know.
Paul Evans has been fly fishing for more than 30 years. And even he's come for a lesson today.
Because most of the time, we're all so damn polite today, we never tell each other what we're doing wrong. In any walk of life. You never walk up to a fisherman and say, you cast like a bum. Like that.
Okay.
Good.
Here we go.
Yeah, you drop the elbow, that's the motion. Good.
Better, good.
It's a very zen experience.
That's Kristen Stimson. Today is her third lesson. She first came across the pools while walking her dog in the park and decided to give it a try. Stimson's friend, Rosanna Rourke, wanted to come too.
I was like, can I please join you and crash your little party? Because I was heading to Montana a couple weeks after, and I wanted to learn before I actually went fly fishing.
In Montana, she caught a trout.
It was amazing. It was about this big.
So pretty.
I gather that it was a young trout, but no criticism from me. Here, I'm as green as it gets.
How many here have never cast a fly rod before?
That would be me. In the pools, there are bright floating rings a few feet across. They're targets to land your fly in. Some people here can hit the target from 100 feet. I'm not concerned about those. I just want the line to go out straight in front of me and not land in a pile by my feet.
There you go. That's it. Good hand position. Nicely done. It piled up a little bit. Do you see it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now this time, pretend you're trying to hit that sign over there.
Okay.
And you got a paintbrush in this hand, and I got to flick it and go whomp and get the paint over there. Okay, now go. Flick that paintbrush. Best cast yet.
I think I'm ready to watch a real fly fisherman cast.
Hey, Ian, how are you?
Remember Mehrdad Saberi? The guy who got me interested in the first place?
Good to see you, man. This is a beautiful bamboo rod that one of our distinguished members has made, and I'm casting it right now.
When Saberi casts, his shoulder, arm, and wrist move fluidly, and the rest of his body is still. His gaze is always directed on the water, right where he wants the fly to land. And pretty much every time, that's where it lands.
Fly fishing gives you the opportunity to really express all the things you strive for in life and demonstrate it in your cast.
The chance to get better and better is one of the reasons he comes here. It's also a way for him to connect with his Persian culture. Saberi was born in Iran and moved to San Francisco in 1979 when he was 11.
The Persian culture is heavy duty into poetry. Rumi and Hafez and what have you. And fly fishing and fly casting basically brings the physical elements of sports and sportsmanship and competition and the poetic side of the culture together for me. And it's all an expression of what's in your mind. I'm a sucker for that. I feel it's my temple. You know, I feel meditation. It's my religion, I think.
Saberi hasn't always felt welcome in the U.S., but here, it's different.
You know, here I am among these incredible people that have all the reasons in the world to be a little reserved. Yet they have absolutely open, welcoming arms, and they judge you by who you are, your character, and your love for the sport. And the sport brings us all together, huddled around, you know, these ponds. So we're lucky to have them here.
And no fish necessary.
That story was told by Ian Lewis. It's part of our podcast made in honor of Golden Gate Park's 150th anniversary. You can subscribe to the Golden Gate Park cast to listen to every episode on the tour. Find it at kalw.org/subscribe. Today's Cross Currents team includes Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Gwynn, and Joshua Sarotiak. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.